You know what really makes us mad? Is wasting money on CDs with only one or two good songs.
Yeah. Tell them about punk!
What's up, posers? Welcome to Punk Lotto Pod. I'm your co-host, Justin Hensley.
I'm your other co-host, Dylan Hensley.
This is the show where we choose one year at random and select one punk, hardcore, emo, or punk-adjacent album from that year to discuss. Not quite the case today, as this is a Patreon-sponsored episode, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But yeah, we are finally back. We talked about it last week on our episode with Jolie from The Darling Fire about Jimmy World, where we were just like, boy, it's been a while since we've been able to do a normal show. But we're here 2 weeks in a row. My internet has not gone out once since I had that guy come out and fix it. So apparently it was a problem at the telephone pole that they replaced back in November. So most likely they messed something up when they moved it.
And they botched it.
Oh, that's a botch.
Yeah.
But steady internet now, and schedule is kind of finally settled down a little bit where we can make things a little bit more normal, have two working vehicles again. So thankfully we can do the show like normal. And so, like I said, this is a Patreon sponsored episode, which means this one's brought to us by a good friend of the show, Dave Brown, host of the podcast One Band Five Songs, as well as the writer of the incredible blog Oklahoma Lefty. Been writing it forever. Such good stuff over there. Go check it out. I think he has a Substack too. Check that out. All those will be linked in the show notes, of course. But to get your own special Patreon-sponsored episode, you could head over to patreon.com/punklottopod. And under our $10 tier, you get to choose what album we talk about on the show. So you get a whole episode dedicated to your selection. There's a couple ways to go with this. You could go with something you just were like, I really want to hear you guys talk about that. Like our good friend, the Madball Mystery Caller, was like, let's talk about that Dillinger 4 record. I was like, hell yeah. But then other guests will say, how about this obscure record? Like, what was a good obscure one? Dave selecting the Roustabouts record. We've had a couple obscure ones. Oh, or the Hymn Kerosene album. That was a fun obscure one.
Yeah.
But then our friend Brian picks a Thrice record for us to talk about. So, you know, it kind of goes all over the place as far as the types of albums you can choose for us to talk about. And we really will take just about anything within reason. We have some veto abilities on things. Like if you want us to do the Smiths or Morrissey, we're probably going to veto that. But
yeah, I am. I'd really want to get some No Mazo shirts printed. That'd be our Punk Lotto merch. If you're not familiar, I tweeted something with the picture of the famous No Bozos shirt that Eddie Van Halen frequently wore, saying that someone should edit in Morrissey's face and have it say no Mazos. But like leave the clown hair in the collar.
And then, yeah, if you sign up for that $10 tier, you can then drop down to the dollar tier or drop off the Patreon entirely. That's up to you. We're not going to make you stay, but you'll get a whole episode dedicated to it. And then if you want to hear our bonus audio that we do every single week, that's only $1. That gets you at least two pieces of new bonus audio every week. Sometimes you get three. You also get writing. I've been doing the top albums of the month that passed, so I've done one for January and February, like top five albums of those months. I've got the Moon Pies from Misfits video series where I try out different drinks, which I need to go buy some of those Peeps Pepsis and try that. The thing is, I've only seen it in the cases and I don't want a whole case.
Is it supposed to have that makes me think it's going to have like a really thick texture, like as if there was melted Peeps in it.
I mean, I assume it's just got a marshmallow flavor in there.
And yeah, maybe that's probably the way to go. But that was I was like, that's going to feel weird. Like the Nitro Pepsis.
I watched someone do a Nitro Pepsi on TikTok this week. And I assume it's just the video was backlogged and he just hadn't got to it before now, but he was like, that's a flat soda. And yeah, I think that was like my takeaway from that.
Yeah, I did get I have had a Nitro Pepsi before. I was like, why did I pay more for this?
Yeah. And they want you to pour hard, which makes it even flatter.
Yeah. Just go ahead and get all that carbonation out.
The idea was to make like a smoother drink, I guess, but that's not what I want out of a Pepsi. I also rarely get Pepsi, so that might
be. If I drink a Pepsi, I want it to hurt.
Yeah, that's why I go for Coke more, because Coke's carbonation is much harder. What's the most painful, though, for carbonation? Cheerwine's pretty carbonated. Like, it's probably one of the most carbonated drinks.
Pretty fizzy, and it's pretty sweet. It is just a really great flavor, but I mean, you know, I guess the spiciest soda of all is the McDonald's Sprite. That is the most crisp. Like, that carbonation's not going anywhere. It's the metal tubes, right? That's the story of why McDonald's Sprite is different. It's because they have metal lines instead of plastic hoses, and it keeps the soda colder.
I was gonna say Sun Drop is probably like the drink that hurts you the most when it comes to the carbonation. It's pretty strong carbonation. The lemon limes, I guess, that's where you find your hardest carbonations.
Yeah. We wanna simulate the feeling of sucking on a lemon.
Except for Mountain Dews. Mountain Dews are not that strong carbonation wise.
I don't buy that Mountain Dew is a lemon lime citrus flavored soda. It doesn't taste like citrus. It doesn't taste like any kind of citrus I've ever had. It tastes like liquid corn. I mean, it's right there in the name. I think it is really supposed to be corn liquor,
yeah.
The soda. That's the flavor.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, it's as sweet as it is because they were trying to, like, cut the alcohol burn.
Yeah.
And then they take the alcohol out of it, and they're like, well, I guess we'll just keep it as sweet. Which, yeah, you can see me try the Mountain Dew Pitch Black, the Fruit Quake, the Voodoo. Basically, anytime you see a new Mountain Dew flavor, I'll have done one. Have you tried that new Coca-Cola Move, the Rosalia one?
No.
It's in that same line as what the Space one and the Dreamland ones.
Yeah.
Where you're like, these are not good, and they're the most available.
Yeah.
The Move tastes like suntan lotion is what it tastes like to me.
I still haven't tried Starry, but I mean, that's mostly because I know what Starry is. It's just Sierra Mist again, but
yeah. But yeah, you can go watch those over on the Patreon as well. What are we doing this week for audio wise? You want to do an I'm listening? We haven't done one in a while.
Sure.
We should have enough to do that. So we'll do that. We'll do an I'm listening over there where Dylan and I talk about the albums we've listened to since the last time we recorded an I'm listening, which I think was the very last week of January. So yeah, all that's $1, patreon.com/punklottopod. All the social media, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at PunkLottoPod. Voicemail line 202-688-PUNK. Call us and leave us a message. And yeah, let's move along then. So, good friend Dave, he selected an album for us to talk about today, and we'll get to that in a minute. But, as usual, we like to take a look at the other albums that came out in the corresponding year. So this record was released in 1999. And of course, previously we have covered... We've covered the Lawrence Arms and the Distillers. We did the Lawrence Arms Guided Tour of Chicago and the Distillers self-titled EP. We did that with good friend Corey. We also did Orchids, Chaos is Me, along with Envy's Angel's Curse, Whispered in the Edge of... It cuts off. We did that with Paul DiCiccio of Tor Johnson Records. We did a singles action for 1999, so that was fun, where we went through a Billboard magazine. We did the Short Music for Short People compilation. We did that with talk show host, our friends from the North. And we did Jimmy World's Clarity with Dave Gorman of the band Orange Island. So that was our most recent hit at 1999. So not as recent as I thought it was. But what else came out that year that is important to mention? Why don't you go first?
Quite a lot, actually. I'm trying to think of what's most relevant to what we're talking about. Just looking at this. So like, Famous Monsters. I don't think that's really that relevant to what we're talking about.
That's the like first Misfits album I remember seeing in like stores. It was like Walmart, I think. And that makes sense.
On the kind of, I think maybe related. Related to what the album we're talking about. There's 99 is a pretty significant year for like the retro garagey type stuff. The White Stripes have their self-titled record that year, which was not, you know, necessarily an important record when it came out. They wouldn't people didn't know who they were when that came out, but that is the first album. And it's definitely of, you know, kind of the moment with stuff like that. I mean, there's a Roland S. Howard record that year that's a pretty big deal. Slater Kinney, the Hot Rock, came out that year. I think that's probably pretty close to what we're talking about. And La Tigra's self-titled record came out that year as well. You know, a couple steps away there. But as far as being, you know, Pacific Northwest, is definitely related. I want to say there's got to be something else in that lane, something big.
I mean, I guess it depends on how big you think like the Brain Bombs are. Or
there's a Guitar Wolf record, definitely somewhere. That's a big one for Guitar Wolf.
Yeah, it's probably one of their most important records. Is U.S. Maple? I guess U.S. Maple is kind of in the lane we're talking about. They did Talker that year. Kind of bluesy, noisy.
You know, and maybe this is a stretch. Less Savvy Fav? You think that's in the lane?
Maybe.
I'm thinking of the front man. If you've ever seen clips of them and his stage presence in particular.
Yeah. I will mention there's a Dropkick Murphys record called The Gang's All Here that year, which stay tuned for the Patreon. I'm going to be recording a little bit of audio about the Dropkick Murphys. It's going to be for the You Lost Me There pod. So that'll be fun once I get that recorded and edited, posted.
There's a Man or Astro Man record, which is not a band I could really care for. But, you know, like I said, similar lane. And then we've got some more gimmick punk stuff. Voila Intruder from Gogol Bordello. That band with the R word in their name. R word guy came from.
Yeah. You know, normally I feel like we would run into way more of this kind of record on these charts, but maybe 99 was like the beginning of that. It was phasing out before it comes back later, you know, because it comes back again in like the 2000s. But like we don't have as much of like the blues punk stuff, like not really John Spencer Blues Explosion or that kind of thing.
Well, what's the we're looking at the punk. Well, the Don has put out Get Skin Tight, which is in your kind of glammy garagey.
Yeah.
Lane as well. I think there's more colors to it than just the straight blues punk, which and I think the record that we're talking about is not really I wouldn't describe it as
no
outright blues punk. So but I am curious, what is the what is rock music in general in 99? We have, I mean, we're too early for your Strokes.
Mm-hmm.
So there might be like a Hives record. They were certainly around then. Wilco is doing their Pet Sounds record in 99. There's a pretty big Tom Waits record that kind of fits.
I pulled specifically garage rock, even though like you said, the record that we're talking about today is not strictly garage rock, but you got Sahara Hot Nights, Come On Let's Pretend.
Mm-hmm.
There is John Spencer Blues Explosion, Acme Plus, Cheater Slicks, Dead Moon. There's a Helicopters, Glucifer Split. Yeah, so like kind of in that vein. If we were to look at more just kind of traditional punk, I guess, like your pop punk, punk rock. Let's see, this would have been OrgCore, right? 99, punknews.org was probably a thing in 99. So we would have stuff, AFI's Black Sails in the Sunset. That's right before the, quote, sellout record.
Oh, there's your big, how is this not higher? Am I not sorting by popular? How the hell is Astro Lounge 4 pages back on the rock charts?
Because I don't think anybody really cared about the CD. It was just the song All Star.
Yeah, but it's this website loves to go dunk on something. So,
I mean, Sugar Ray was on page 2 on the punk charts with 1459, which was their Someday record. And Every Morning.
You know, and as far as, well, all right, as far as punk, looking at those charts, we're still in more of a post Sunny Day Midwest emo phase and a post Green Day pop punk. This is concurrent with, you know, Blink-182's Enema of the State. So we're not quite to org core, but it's getting there. I mean, there's obviously there's a Hot Water Music record. There's A Lillington's record.
The Atari's Blue Skies, Broken Hearts, Next 12 Exits, the really, actually a really good Atari's record. I don't know their full discography very well, but that's one that I actually really like. Newfound Glory's Nothing Gold Can Stay, that's their first record. Hopeless Romantic by the Bouncing Souls. So like Orgcore's like beginnings, I guess, are here. And we, again, we fully understand that Orgcore is not a true genre. It was just a signifier of the type of punk music that was popular on the website, punknews.org.
Yeah.
It signified a type of punk, though, who would have been, listening to those kind of bands.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think the bands that fall closest to that category in 99, they tend to be more in like a post-Fat Wreck, post-Ramones core variety.
Yeah.
And maybe a little bit of a hardcore, you know, like AFI being, you know, almost a hardcore band. And not as much the polished Hot Water Music iteration that it would really kind of take over in the 2000s.
Yeah, I think 1999 is, overall, if you look at it, it's a pretty scattered scene at the time. Like, it's a lot of different stuff. There's lots of hardcore. There's still lots of just pop punk. And then there's the metalcore stuff and emo and... I think ska was already kind of on its way out because there's not really a lot of ska popping up here, unfortunately.
We're post ska bubble, really kind of tail end of swing revival.
Are we past the oi and street punk too at this point? I feel like I'm not seeing as much of that. Like, there's a Tiger Army record.
I never felt like that got huge. It always felt like a substantial undercurrent at one point that then kind of dipped.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is probably past that.
Yeah, I think we're between
phase of it, but
movements, really. Like, we're, yeah, very interesting. Like, the No Idea style punk is on its come up. I mean, though, Hot Water Music has already put out like 3 albums by this point in 99. The wave of Hot Water Music clones doesn't happen until the 2000s, I don't think. I mean, I'm seeing tons of really great records as I like just scroll continuously. Propaganda, Where Quantity Is Job Number One. Discounts, Half Fiction. Far Side, The Monroe Doctrine.
I'm on page 6 and I'm seeing Actions and Indications by Seaweed.
Yeah.
Which is a great record. Discount. Yeah.
It is really strong. Like, there's a Luna Chicks record, Luxury Problem.
Alert Today, Alive Tomorrow by The Muffs.
Yeah. 7 Seconds, Good to Go. American Steel's Rogues March. Like, it's a good year. I think we did a Patreon starting 5 on 99 because I saw a couple records. Capillary Lockdown by the Red Scare was one that I had picked for that.
Here's a record that I was thinking of and I didn't even realize that it came out this year that I think is very much in the same lane as the record that we're talking about. But Rye Coalition put out the Lipstick Game.
Yeah.
Which is the Rye Coalition going for it record. As much as that band could go for it, but
yeah.
We must have done a starting 5 on this one, because I'm pretty sure I put Speakeasy by Dave Zaker on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's Waxwing for Mad Men Only. I don't think I actually picked that. I think I was going to. Yeah, 99, fun year, honestly. A lot of really good stuff. Rituals of Life, Stretch Armstrong. And it's got like 38 pages of results, which always means that it's a dense year, a lot of stuff. So yeah, well, let's get into the album we're actually talking about today. So Dave selected for us Running Through My Bones by the Tight Bros from Way Back When. We'll be right back. The Tye Bros from way back when were from Olympia, Washington. They formed in 1997. This album was released on Kill Rock Stars on either April 1st or the 27th of 1999. The internet is split on when it came out, but we know it's April. This is their full-length debut. And worth noting, Kill Rock Stars is an Olympia-based record label that famously put out albums by Bikini Kill, Slater Kenny, and Unwound. So the same year the Kill Rock Stars released this album, they released The Hot Rock, which we mentioned, an EP by the doom metal band Thrones. There's a Deerhoof album, and this is weird, an Unwound singles comp, and the Joey Ramone produced Ronnie Spector EP that we talked about briefly on the Christmas Joey Ramone thing. So just look at that. Just look at Kill Rock Stars. They're putting out this record, Riot Girl record, a doom record,
Thrones,
avant-garde.
Thrones is Joe Preston, who was wasn't he briefly in the Melvins?
Yeah. Was he in Earth for a minute as well?
He's done some stuff with Earth. He's done some stuff with High on Fire. I wanted to say he had something to do with Harvey Milk, but I don't think he did.
Yeah. So that actually, when you think about what Joe Preston was involved with, it actually makes more sense why he's on Kill Rock Stars. The Deerhoof one is the one where I'm like, whoa. What?
No, he was briefly in Harvey Milk. Yeah. Okay. But later, much later.
How do we describe Deerhoof?
Weirder than you think, maybe. Weirder than I thought. I thought that they were like kind of a whatever 2000s indie rock band up until like last year, and I listened to probably the record that came out in 99. Which record was that?
The album that came out in 99 would have been.
No, it wasn't that one.
Holdy Paws.
Which one did I listen to? Runners 4. Yeah, I listened to the 2005 record.
They actually have an album coming out this year that I have on my list to check out whenever it comes out. But
I should listen to that. I'm curious.
Why did I think Deerhoof was a Japanese band?
Because their singer is Japanese.
Satomi Matsuzaki.
Matsuzaki. Yeah.
So maybe I didn't.
Oh, her only in yeah. pictures. Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny. How your brain can just be like, yep, that's what they are. Yeah, so it's just like a odd collection of styles, and they're a fairly regional record label, so that is important to note, because with the Tye Bros being from Olympia, that's probably the biggest reason. Well, and the other connections, so we'll get to that. So the personnel on this record is Jared Warren on vocals, Dave Harvey on guitar, John Quittner on guitar, Justin Olson on drums, and Sean Kelly on bass. Jared Warren was also from the band Carp, noise rock band, and later he was in Big Business, which I think also is later in the Melvins too. I think both Big Business guys were in the Melvins later. John Quittner and Dave Harvey played in Bedhead it's Behead the Prophet. Very different. John Quittner was also briefly in Pinhead Gunpowder at the exact same time period that Sarah Kirsch was in it. So that very tiny window where Sarah Kirsch was in Pinhead Gunpowder, Sarah Kirsch of Fuel, Please Inform the Captains, Hijack, Beta Brains, Torches to Rome fame. She was briefly in Pinhead Gunpowder, the Green Day side project. And so Tye Bros from way back when is a little bit of a supergroup.
A little bit.
It's a side project, 100% a side project. They're all veterans. They've all played in other bands. They're all from the local scene for the most part. And it's funny, I read this. Their intent was to release 70s-inspired rock and roll to the sweaters and Buddy Holly glasses crowd. So the original lead singer, Jared, he originally played bass in the band, while John Quittner and Dave Harvey tried to sing. They were going to be the singers, but then I don't think they could do it. So then Jared switched to vocals when they brought in Sean Kelly on bass. So, okay. Normally the first thing I like to say is, what made you choose this album? Dave's not here with us today, but he did send a recording on his thoughts on this record. So we're going to play this here, and then we will start talking about the record more so.
Hey, what's up, posers? I thought I'd drop you a little line and talk about the record I ask you guys to talk about. One, because its scheduling is a B, and two, because I really want to hear your opinions, and I don't care about hearing mine because I've sat with this record for over 20 years. So yes, Tight Bros from way back when, running through my bones. This is not the most obscure thing I've had you listen to. It's probably the second most obscure thing. And my hopes are that this continues my outstanding track record of having you listen to records that you end up really liking, or at least somewhat liking. So far, you haven't hated anything I've given you. So I'm hoping that continues here. So how in the world did I know about this band, right? So this band is from, where are they from? Like Olympia, Washington, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And so this is one of the many bands that I learned of because of this guy named Jim, who was one of the owners and guys who ran this phenomenal record store in Oklahoma City called Music Dimensions. And that was around mid-90s through early 2000s. They eventually closed down. But Jim turned me on to so much great music. And one of the things he turned me on to was this record, Running Through My Bones. And, you know, the one thing that you obviously hear, the one comparison that this band always got, much to their own chagrin, was AC/DC, because the singer's voice is very reminiscent of Bon Scott. But there's more going on, and honestly, as I listen to it now, I get more out of this record now in 2023 than I did in 1999 when it came out. And I even saw the band back in 1999. It was a great show. It was them, The Facet. I think that's F-A-C-E-T. I think that was a band. There was some emo band that had like a saxophone. It was weird. And then the Weaklings jumped on the bill last minute. They had been had a show in Oklahoma City a few nights before. They were traveling back around. They came in to the record store because this show was at Music Dimensions. And we're like, hey, can we jump on the bill? And Paige and Jim were like, well, we can't pay you. But, you know, if anything you sell, great. And they were like, sure. So they ended up headlining the show. And my God, their performance was just outstanding. It was everyone in that room just was standing there, mouths agape, just bonked, you know, just blown away by what we'd seen, and none of us were expecting it. Tight Bros were just about as good, and the band is seriously tight. The realization I had about this band is this band is the dumb jock wrestler of punk rock, right? Because this is definitely 70s kind of butt rock. But it's not stupid about it. And I want to actually read something from Pitchfork. Yes, I know, a super trusted website and source. No, it's not. But in their review of the band's follow-up, Lend You a Hand, they really, really capture this band. So let me... The band's sophomore full-length is 37 minutes of tightly packed, over-the-top rock action that unabashedly channels AC/DC by way of the Stooges, without diluting the formula with masturbatory solos or pretentious harmonic noodling. Yeah, that completely applies to this first record, and it's just, I don't know, man, it just, I'm not making any sense, I know. But I love this record. And I mean, come on. With an opening like that. How could you go wrong? Looking forward to hearing what you guys say. Take care, my friends.
All right. So when Dave sent me this selection, my first initial response was, what the hell is this?
Yeah, it was more or less my response when you sent it to me. I was like, what? Who? Weirdly, I didn't do any research before listening to it. I just put it on. I kind of went into it cold, just being like, yeah, all right, this is a Dave pick that I've never heard of, which means it's like probably truly obscure.
Yeah.
Because Dave manages to go so deep.
Mm-hmm.
just with the stuff that he recalls from the time period, you know.
Yeah,
it's always something that he was like into in the moment. I'm like, damn, you've held on to that forever. So I went into it really knowing nothing about it, kind of immediately got what it was like, you know, as far as like what they were going for sonically, and, you know, presentation made a little bit more sense. So it was really kind of like mid listening to the record that I actually started to like research it and found out the Carp connection and the Kill Rock Stars, you know, that it was where it comes from and who it is, that it was members from other bands. I was like, oh, okay, I get it. I really get it. I don't know where I was going.
Well, then I'll go from my initial reaction. So yeah. Yes, I had that. What is this? And when I got the album sent to me, the art was the first thing I saw, and I was like, what is this? And the art and the font on the album cover, and then the name, and I was just like, what is this? Like, my brain could not comprehend what I was looking at. And initial reactions, I think it's a horrible album cover and logo, and I think the name is awful too. The name of the band is awful too. And just like that, the way the album cover, it has this fishbulb lens, like delayed thing, and it's like arms. I think their arms moving, or people in a crowd all sticking their arms up. And it just, the cover just makes me feel uncomfortable. I don't know why. the way it looks just like, ugh. Just makes me think of body horror type stuff.
Yeah, there's the little dot, compass dial looking whatever it is, calendar maybe, circle at the bottom with all of the little eyes in it too. Yeah, it's a horrible album cover to look at. It is from afar, it is difficult to grasp anything, to latch onto any details. It's just kind of like a blurry, disgusting mass of flesh tones and lightning. And it doesn't really get better the closer you look at it. You can just kind of piece together what exactly is upsetting about it. But yeah, the number of variations on this, we've been trying to do this episode for like 4 weeks, and the number of variations, yeah, you and I have texted each other the name of this band. I had to go look at my last FM to figure out what the name of the band was. I was like, what is that actually called? What is the album actually called?
Yeah, this is our classic whenever we're getting ready for a show. Or like after we've done the show, we just call the band names completely wrong things. I don't know. We always do it. We've done it forever. And this was one that we were just like, what are we doing? And we could not remember the actual name. So we obviously would change it into something absolutely ridiculous. That it was just like,
what was the last one I sent you?
Let's see.
The Vinga Boys Who Like to Party. I think that was what it was.
Yeah, I don't want to dig too far to try and find the rest of them. But yeah, that's one of the furthest off from what it actually means, too. But yeah, once I actually like put it on, I was like, oh, OK, I know what they're doing now. Like, it was pretty obvious. Like, the second I started listening to it, I'm like, oh, OK, we're going for party rock, butt rock, late 70s style party rock. How did I describe it here? Yeah, this is a party rocking album, riding in your T-top convertible, beer bash on the weekends. I imagine cut-off jean shorts and sleeveless tees, big sunglasses, mullet, sweatband. Like, I'm picturing that kind of 70s party guy.
Thing I've heard you, Dave, the Pitchfork thing referencing like AC/DC and like a late 70s kind of like, you know, John Cougar Mellencamp fan, party rocking guy, I only hear MC5. It is like only MC5 to me. I mean, like, I can kind of see a little bit of an AC/DC resemblance, but the whole energy and the whole presentation, it's got a very brothers and sisters, you know, Kick Out the Jams, MC5, like chant revival, rock and roll energy. Especially when you combine that with like kind of this maximalist nightmare collage album artwork. And to which that immediately takes me to like the other MC5 imitator of this roughly this time period, Valiant Thor.
Yeah.
Which, yeah. And they bring in kind of like more 70s metal imagery and elements, but the bones of it, the structure of it to me is totally just ripping fast riffs and fast drums and shrieking and noise, to which, you know, to which I can connect to like that MC5 influence on like The Damned and even like Bad Brains and, you know, other and Dead Kennedys, kind of more punk hardcore stuff from the 80s, but which I think is kind of probably like the natural lineage of like where these punk guys kind of went backwards through those bands and that went to those bands and their influences, back to this and was like, oh yeah, this is really cool stuff. Let's do stuff like this.
Yeah. My initial similarities that I thought of whenever listening to this, I did hear the AC/DC sound as well. It's not so much in the music. They don't really play like that kind of way. Like it's not very Angus Young sounding.
Well, they just don't have the Malcolm kind of rhythm. They don't have those kinds of riffs, which is to me what AC/DC sounds like. More mid-paced, more muscular kind of like chugging riffs. But
I'd say like Sheer Mag now is probably closer to AC/DC than this is.
Yeah.
Which that's also going for like a Judas Priest thing, but I get the AC/DC in the vocals, the Bon Scott style vocal. But yeah, musically I've got the MC5 in there. Valiant Thor was my like, well, that's my touchstone, I guess, for this kind of music being the closest, because vocally they do sound a lot alike. Valiant himself and Jared here have a very similar high yell. And I even got a little Brainworms in there, because Brainworms had a little bit of a maximalist rock edge to it, despite being just like a post-hardcore band from Richmond. But spiritually, it really reminded me of the time-tested punks playing big dumb rock. Like, that's a thing. You know, Catharsis had their side project called Umlaut. There's that Lard EP called, like, 70s Rock Must Die. I even get little Batfangs in here who are trying to throw back to, like, classic maximal rock and roll.
And there's definitely some Rollins comparisons to make, some late Black Flag comparisons to make. And the Stooges, obviously, like massive Stooges influence.
Yeah, they claim Kiss and Alice Cooper, as well as Black Flag, the Stooges, and MC5 as influences.
I can hear the Kiss and Alice Cooper. That's the 70s rock I can really attach it to, like especially in the more melodic elements. Yeah, I can definitely see some Kiss. I was just skimming the record before recording to try and have some of more fresh in my mind. And picked up on the Kiss thing that it didn't really get as much on the first listen.
Yeah, it's got like a, which Kiss is it? It's like the early stuff. It's like Deuce.
Yeah.
Like that guitar riff that begins with Deuce. Yeah. Bam, ba, da, 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 da. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's it.
Yeah, it's definitely self-titled. Definitely like Hotter Than Hell.
Mm-hmm. Pre-Destroyer stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did see multiple reviews compared to Communication Breakdown era Led Zeppelin. Which that's, when is that? What era is that? Is that later?
That's early. Communication Breakdown is first album.
Like specifically that song was mentioned. 69.
I can see that. I can definitely see this being, which again, that's kind of like fast early Zeppelin is very, very similar to MC5 of being like that bluesy rock and roll.
So the exclaim.ca review was very negative, and it said if this record came out on a major label about 12 years ago, it would have been largely ignored and considered just bad hard rock for losers. All in all, this just isn't that funny, good, or interesting. And I was like, I don't think that's fair.
Well, it Yeah, it would have obviously been entirely overlooked if it came out 12 years prior to 1999, because that would have been 1987.
And that would have been weird if a record sounded like this in 1987.
Yeah, that wouldn't make any sense to have come out then.
Also, if it came out in 1987, then most likely it would have had way more hair influence. It would have sounded like Gangrene and what Suicidal Tendencies were doing back then. The TSOL late period. Yeah, I thought that was a pretty unfair comparison. And I was looking at the Under the Fans Who Also Liked section on Spotify, and it's got Big Business, which that makes sense because of the actual connection there. But they also pulled Riot Coalition, Hot Snakes, and Rocket from the Crypt. And I get that that's what it is, because there was this came out in 99. So there was definitely a 60s and 70s revival thing going on in the late 90s. But it has the edge to it that could carry it into the 2000s, because it definitely feels like, usually when bands are doing this kind of thing, they tend to go more straightforward with the style. But you listen to this and you go, no, this is clearly made by like guys who have connections to like hardcore. And if you know Carp, then you know like Noise. Because Carp, I don't know a ton about them, but they even always had a little bit of a 70s kind of throwback to their sound too. They were the noise rock band that liked pro wrestling. Like, that's kind of how I I thought of this band. Because they have that one that's like the championship belt cartoon cover. And I just to get a frame of reference to figure out, like, all right, what's the Carp connection? I listened to, I guess it's their only album that's actually on Spotify, their 1994 album, Mustaches Wild. And vocally, he still sounds like this. He's just not affecting the type of singer that he was going for in Carp, but he still had that same like Bon Scott quality to his voice on those on that record.
Kind of the raspy, thin, high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know Carp well enough, really. And I don't think the 94 album is like even one that's particularly like beloved by them. So I would have to go try a different one to really get more. But it makes a lot more sense once you've started to figure out A, who these people are, and B, what they do in their other projects, because Big Business has a bit of that too. They do a little throwback. Harvey Milk has a throwback sound too. It's like doom mixed with like 70s rock and roll. Melvins had that, you know, they did all those Kiss parody.
Yeah.
Solo records is what they did them. Are they solo records actually? But yeah, it's a bunch of people in the like alt noise scene who are like grew up on 70s hard rock and paying homage to that. I wonder at their age group. I wonder if they were probably in their late 20s, probably in their 30s maybe when they were doing this. I don't know the ages of anyone in the band, but Carp started a lot earlier in the 90s. So yeah, that means that their childhood would have had, yeah, they were probably born in the 70s. So they would be pulling from that kind of stuff. So if they were a couple years older, that's where you get all the bands who are pulling from like 80s hardcore, you know? It's that same thing that happens in every couple of decades. You have people throwing back to a specific sound. That's why you get new metal bands now. That's why you get bands who sound like new metal bands now, because they were kids. They were like literal children when the new metal thing was happening, because yeah, everybody older than that either grew out of their new metal or hated it immediately. So what's the next sound? Are we going to get the Nickelback post grunge? Is that the next sound to be appropriated for a new wave?
What was the last I wonder if those are dependent on population booms. Do we have is there a Zoomer boom?
I don't know. Are we at Zoomer boom yet? I think everything we're getting now is still new metal influenced, because we're doing like we also step backwards into the rap rock 90s and less the new metal stuff with your Turnstiles and your military guns and MS Paint.
Well, there was a lot of talk about indie sleaze, and I don't think that's converted to anything musically, but that's been more in the style side of things. But we're also still pretty heavily in the 90s, kind of regurgitating the 90s.
Yeah. Well, we've said before, there's always two different types of throwbacks happening simultaneously.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Hardcore
cycles cultural through it, like every 4 years.
But. Yeah. Yeah. Hardcore. The subcultures, they churn through that those rotations really fast. It's the
there's a new freshman class every year.
Yeah. Who go, have you heard of this band? Hell yeah, man. But the grander cultural throwback is still firmly 90s. I think we've still got a couple more years of that too. The 80s throwback lasted like a decade.
Yeah, well, if you're going by, you know, the slower moving cultural recycling apparatus of film and television, yeah, we only just got into the 90s stuff. So
yeah, I guess fashion wise, we're about to enter the 2000s, which was a very bad period for fashion.
Well, they've been saying that. They were saying that we were going to go into a lot of 2000s. And there's some millennial fashion happening, recycling happening. But yeah, so much of it is bad that it's hard to find genuine inspiration from that time period. You could look at it, you're like, ugh.
Yeah.
I don't want to copy that. That's not fun.
Metallic colors, metallic pastels. That was a big thing for women's clothing. And then men's clothing was just like, everything was giant. We had bootcut jeans and everything was huge, but not in the wide leg 90s.
No, not in the fun, like actually looks kind of good way. Yeah.
In the, oh, nobody looked good in that.
Yeah.
A lot of dark blue and black denim. Yeah. Not
John Cena shorts.
Yeah. So what did you actually think of this record? I mean, we've had more time to sit with this album than any other record due to our like just inability to get the recording done. I revisited this probably like 4 or 5 times at this point. So I feel like we've got to really have digested it.
I didn't listen to it in full more than once. I did listen to like the first half of it a second time when I thought we were going to be recording. And then I think your internet like died immediately.
Yeah, that was when like I came home and the internet wasn't even working.
And so then I've skimmed through like every song to just be like, let's get the intro, let's get like the bridge, let's get the, you know, let's get the intro, the chorus, the bridge, get the feel for each song, which I think the skim, this most recent skim, endeared it to me more, especially knowing what it was going into it and kind of looking for the standout elements from each song. I probably couldn't go song by song, but maybe if you can, we can hit individual song highlights. But my first impression was, my first impression was that the individual songs themselves were not that memorable, that the general flow and listening experience of the record did not get me invested in any individual song, but the experience of listening to the album the first time itself was pretty memorable. I mean, it was like 4 weeks ago at this point, and I distinctly remember like what I was doing. I walked to the shoe store and bought some new work shoes and came home and sat on the chair that I'm not supposed to sit in.
Why not?
It's the chair that I jokingly call the chair that only your dad is allowed to sit in, because it's the chair that my wife sits in whenever we sit down to eat together and watch TV. Which it's fine. I can sit in the chair. I am allowed to sit in the chair, just not when she's here, because it's her chair. Which is, interestingly enough, where I listen to most of, if not almost the entire Hard Volume Rollins record. So these two records are like very much tied in my mind because of where I was and the similarities that are actually there. Heavy Stooges influence, and especially Rollins sounds really raspy and
mm-hmm. Yeah,
raw on that record.
Having listened to Hard Volume as recently as we have, I'm like, oh yeah, there is that, like, that high yell that they're both doing on this album.
My initial impression of it was kind of fun, but not very memorable. Not something I felt inspired to come back to. What was your first impression of it?
First impression, I got that very strong Valiant Thor feel to it. And when I was done listening to it, I went and listened to a little bit of Total Universe Man by Valiant Thor. And I was like, yeah, it's the same spirit. I didn't finish that record. It's really long, that one.
Yeah.
Most of Valiant Thor's albums were too long. But if you like that vocal style and like that energy, there's a lot of similarity there if you've never listened to Valiant Thor. I can't speak for later material, but the first couple albums I used to listen to pretty regularly. Plus the guy, like, lead singer, they were okay. The gimmick of Valiant Thor is they were aliens from another planet here to rock. It's kind of like the thing. They're basically Gwar, just without costumes. Their costumes were denim vests and they look like bikers, long hair and long beards. If ZZ Top were aliens, I guess. But the lead singer, Valiant himself, apparently was from our area, and he was definitely in my bookstore one night, and I kind of was like, oh shit, that's the guy from Valiant Thor. I didn't go talk to him. Probably could have, but so I overall I'm like, this is a fun record. It's a really fun, enjoyable rock and roll album is how was my main takeaway from the record. And I do like this kind of like all out, hard-hitting, fun music, because a lot of heavy and loud music isn't that fun, and this just has like, we're not taking ourselves too seriously here, you know, we're just having a good time. And it's obvious when you do stuff like on Strut, they do the bebop baloo bop Elvis thing, which if you've been on TikTok and you know the Strut sound, here's my Strut, doot doo doo. It has, that band has a similar energy, just a little bit more like a funk version of that Southern white guy funk feel. But it's like of the era that they're pulling from. Hayseed Rock has the Big Kiss feel with the ooh hoo hoos in the song. So Sneaky's got another Big Kiss riff on it too. I think my favorite song on the, my two favorite songs on the album are probably Gimme Love and Hayseed Rock. Those are the ones that I gave 4.0s. But in a lot of the other songs, like Working Overtime, That's a Promise, I gave those 3.75. There's a couple 3.5s on here. My least favorite song is probably So Sneaky. I don't know. It's fun. I can't call it anything other than fun. It's not enlightening. It's not, you're not going to be like, wow, this is revolutionary. You know, this clearly was designed to be a ton of fun live, and I bet they were great. Dave told us that they were really good there, and it's the type of fun show that I bet would just stick with you for a long time. Like I think about the Hour of the Wolf and She Rides sets that I've seen over the years, and I'm like, those are some of the wildest sets I've ever seen. I think the Triclops set might be one of the weirdest things I've ever seen, but and some of the best shows I've ever saw were just like, what was that? Like, just like this all out maximalist attitude. That's definitely part of it.
The harmonica, which songs are those on?
The harmonica, I think, is on Give Me Love. No, harmonica's on Strut.
Say what?
No, harmonica's on Strut. That's what
that's on Strut.
With the bebop aloo boss.
Does it not show up elsewhere?
Let's see. I don't have it in my notes. There's some slide guitar on Light That Fuse, the last track on there. Yeah, I don't have any more harmonica notes, though.
I guess it is just on Gimme Love. I really thought it was on more than one song, but I think it needs more variety within the style that they're doing. Because like having that harmonica kind of like that made me think of like a pub rock band, which makes, now thinking about this record and making that connection, there's never really been a pub rock revival. What's the closest thing to that?
Well, pub rock already is like,
I mean, it's, yeah,
so specific
itself. It is like a throwback to 50s, 60s R&B.
Blue Eyed Soul is probably like your closest.
Yeah, it's not as hard. It doesn't have that hard hitting.
Yeah, pub rock doesn't have the same connotations to me as bar rock does, because I can think of plenty of bar rock. Like, this feels kind of bar rock, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, bar rock is any kind of classic rock cover band. Mm-hmm. I guess the closest thing to like the pub rock sensibility is kind of the Australian garage stuff right now.
That could be. Because Australian punk had a much more rock and roll blues front sound to it.
Has that Saints sensibility.
The Radio Birdman.
Yeah.
It's funny because when you listen to Australian bands, you still get hints of that. Like Amel and the Sniffers, totally. Like they're going for that sound, but like even like the other ones, you're like, oh yeah, y'all are all descendant from that particular brand of punk music in Australia.
I don't know. I want to see bands doing Dr. Feelgood type stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Well, just like
do the jangle like pop bands gutter. Do the jangle pop bands come from that lineage too? They're like Big Star. They're all inspired by Big Star. Is Big Star kind of close to punk rock?
Bob, Big Star was really kind of a de-glammed glam rock band.
Yeah.
No, I mean the stuff that the more direct lineage. I mean, pub rock kind of splits into punk and new wave, really. I mean, or power pop, you know, Elvis Costello, Nick Lowe type stuff. But which there's plenty of like Elvis Costello, Nick Lowe influence. But I don't know. I want that somebody to play harmonica full time, which I guess that's your garage punk thing.
Yeah,
that was probably folk punk. The other.
Yeah, I mean, we need more harmonica in rock music, punk music.
I don't know. Hold Steady, maybe.
Because even Lucero doesn't. Is there harmonica on any Lucero?
No, actually.
There's accordion.
Some accordion. Keys and organ. Yeah.
Does he? I don't know. Now I'm kind of imagining him wearing a. Not when Ben plays solo, has he used harmonica?
Not that I've seen.
I don't know.
Yeah. Brian Fallon has.
I'm just trying to imagine to see who I've seen like wear the harmonica like rig that you have to. And I want to say I saw Ben wear one once, but I could be wrong. Kepi uses lots of harmonica. Well, what's your overall takeaway from it? Did you enjoy it?
It's fine. I didn't like hate it. I didn't really dislike it. I didn't love it. I found myself disengaged from it pretty often. I think it's something that if I spent more time, I could pick out the riffs that I really like and the parts that really stand out to me. But it still does kind of just wash together, which is, I don't know. I think maybe it's kind of like its biggest problems are maybe song building and production. It's definitely done cheaply and mixed pretty quickly. So it really just lacks definition.
Yeah, I mean, it's a side project. So it's definitely, so I don't know how active Carp was at the time, but they all wound up doing other things later too. So it has side project energy to it for sure. So yeah, you're not going to put quite as much money into it either, which I don't think Kill Rock Stars had a ton to throw around recording wise.
Do you, this is a question for you and you only, do you think that Jeff Suffering saw this band and was like, let's start a rock and roll band?
So you're talking about like his Suffering and the Hideous Thieves?
No, Raft of Dead Monkeys.
Oh.
They didn't form until 99.
You know, he was in Seattle. That is a possibility. Wow, I didn't think about that. Because Raft of Dead Monkeys does have that similar. It's rock a noisier, coalition. More abrasive thing.
Yeah.
Which it was designed to be more abrasive from their name to literally everything that they've did.
I think Doug has cited Carp as an influence.
Yeah, I can see that, especially for what he's done post Roadside.
Yeah.
All his stoner doom bands he's done. That would be very funny if Raft of Dead Monkeys was inspired by Tight Bros from way back when, because I can see it. They don't sound that much alike, though.
No, for sure. But I mean, it's, you know, Doug Lorig and John Spaulding writing the riffs, so yeah. The guitar parts, they're gonna come from different places, but the energy, the presentation, the whole like rock, dangerous rock and roll, you know, kind of attitude.
Dangerous rock and roll is definitely like the thing, which was that a big movement? I think it would be a bigger movement in the 2000s.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where Sasscore comes from. So,
yeah, it's true. Sasscore is very bringing back the rock and roll swagger and applying it to like more modern post-hardcore sensibilities. Yeah, and emo. Yeah, there was a little bit of that. Yeah, I don't know. I really liked the record. I thought it was I thought it was fun. I sampled a little bit of the second record, and it doesn't have the same energy. It's not as high powered. It's a little softer. And I don't think this is the type of band that was going to have a super long shelf life anyway. But I don't know. I had fun as a one off. Yeah, that's great. And if I'd seen them live, I would probably never forget it. So yeah, I'm down for it. Is it better than a Valiant Thor record?
You know, I've heard those Valiant Thor records a lot, and I don't remember any of those songs. So maybe.
Yeah, those Valiant Thor records are fine. But yeah, overall, well, Dave, you succeeded in not selecting anything that we hated. So that's, if you want to chalk that up to a win, where would you put it compared to like a Roustabouts or the Jello Biafra Mojo Nixon record?
I think I probably got more out of the other two, the Roustabouts and Jello. Though I might be more inclined to revisit this record than the Jello and Mojo Nixon record.
Yeah.
Which is a record that has its moments, but overall is...
It's more novelty.
It's a post-Dead Kennedy's Jello Biafra record.
It's yeah.
What it is.
I'd be more likely to visit a Mojo Nixon solo record, or his band records, than another Jello solo record.
I don't know about that one.
All right. Well, I think that will do it for us. Dave, thank you so much for choosing this album for us to talk about. Definitely going in the deep cut pile for sure. And like we said, hit us up on all the social medias. Leave us a rating or review on iTunes and Spotify. I noticed our 5 stars on Spotify went down to a 4.9. Which I guess that means somebody voted us as a 4.5. That's probably how you get that.
I didn't know you could rate podcasts on Spotify.
Yeah, you can also do like, as a podcaster, you can engage with an audience through the app. Like you can prompt questions and polls. I don't know what kind of questions or polls anybody wants on a podcast episode, but they're there. You can interact that way. Spotify is really trying to make you like, they spend all that money on Joe Rogan. They're like, we got to get people to use us for podcasts more. Because really, market wise, they're number 3 behind Apple's market dominance. And then the Android version, which is, it's like, doesn't even have a good name. It's like Podcast Radio Addict is the name of the app, the Android podcasting app that's number 2 in podcasts. Platforms, so a non-branded, just automatically built-in player does better than Spotify and podcasting.
We'll see what happens when Spotify rolls out their vertical feed.
Oh right, yeah.
If that has any impact on podcasts.
What is that even gonna look like?
Video content on Spotify.
They already have video content on Spotify. It's those looping videos in the background that you can turn off.
That you are like, what's that? Every time you look at your phone, when there's one of those on, it's like, why is that there?
You watch it for the 2 seconds it loops, and then you stop looking at it. Yeah, I don't know what are they going to do? You can't change people listen to music. So I don't understand.
They're specifically rolling it out to pay bands less, to pay artists less, because they're going to, you can take a smaller payout on royalties for better placement in the vertical feed algorithm.
So is it going to be like YouTube, where YouTube has shorts and you can just basically do TikTok on YouTube, but everyone goes, I don't want that. I want the full video. I'm watching YouTube because I want to watch a full video, not just a looping 30-second clip. You know, I look at TikTok when I want to look at TikTok. I look at YouTube when I want to watch YouTube. That these platforms don't, they're just like, we've got to be the hottest thing.
Yeah.
Like, no, you can't stop being the thing that people go to you for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's like on all those Twitter, like when they would try and do all the stuff like spaces or, you know, their version, their stories. Remember when they had stories?
Yeah.
Yeah. Stop it.
Do the thing that you are that people want.
Right. But yeah, give us a rating on iTunes. We haven't had a new rating on iTunes since February of last year, so we really would like a new one. Give us a little review there. I keep saying iTunes, your Apple Podcast app. But yeah, thank you so much. I think that'll do it for us. We'll be back Friday with our new release bonus audio and then a whole new batch of stuff the week after. Talk to you later.
To order Punk, call the number on your screen. Rush delivery is available. Remember, this special offer is not sold in stores.